Hello, welcome back to Movie Catch-Up. Joe Ramone here with Ryan Lancello.
All right, hello.
I had so much I wanted to talk about in this Movie Catch-Up. I watched the original Planet of the Apes movies.
Oh, wow.
The Gene Wilder documentary is out. I finished Fallout. I watched the new movie Hitman. All of that had to get put on the old back burner because you... for some reason, got it. You went nuts with the Australian movies.
Oh, yes,
and I
did.
Felt like I had to join in.
Of course.
Because it makes a better show.
I think so.
So. This is essentially cult Australian comedies, or not even comedies, cult Australian movies.
I don't even think they're cult.
Yeah, I mean, a couple of them are
considered classics.
Classic Australian stuff.
Yeah.
And then we're going to finish up talking about Furiosa, which we both saw. But let's take us through, since you kind of picked. Threw in a couple of suggestions for us to check out, but you assembled this list.
Definitely the one in 97 you recommended, which was a good pick. But yeah, you wisely also suggested to do the Mad Max series for Patreon, which we just finished up. You can check out on patreon.com/almostcultclassics for the low price of $5. I'll try to be cool with the accent.
Surprisingly hot takes on that episode.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah.
I think you'll
be surprised at our thoughts on that series.
But the big thing about Mad Max is it kicked off that, what some people would consider the Australian New Wave. Brought about a lot of new actors, a lot of new directors. And, I'm looking at this, I'm like, holy fuck. I'm like, a lot of these movies have been on my list for a while. Like, I need to check a lot of these out. And, I am in love with Australia and the Australians. I love it. Everyone likes to call them British rednecks.
They're fantastic people. I love the Australians. Outback is one of my favorite restaurants. The Kookaburra wings, they're fantastic.
Could you do Trump, Australian Trump?
That's like when Mel Blanc used to do Bugs Bunny impersonating Daffy Duck.
I love the Kookaburra wings. They're the best.
It's kind of.
Yeah, a little bit.
Folks, I love the Kookaburra wings. They're fantastic.
Yeah, that's pretty good. We'll work on that. But
side note. They are fantastic wings.
The Kookaburra wings?
Oh, my God.
They're okay.
I love those.
Last time I had Outback, it was fucking repulsive.
Oh.
And I love Outback. I get two blooming onions. I'm a sick freak.
I might go tonight.
I eat two.
Well, you don't eat wings in front of people.
I eat them at home.
Well, not in front of people.
Whatever. They're
anyway.
Not saucy, are they?
No, they're the opposite.
Right.
No,
no sauce for the rye guy. I will do my best.
We have to get it all out.
I want to move. I want to live amongst them and talk like them.
You'd be great down there.
I think so. Yeah. I think I'd fit in.
When we would have to zoom to do the podcast, and you would just be upside down.
Right. Exactly. But
anywho, this is the only movie in the discussion that I didn't watch. So take us through the first.
Right. So I kind of wanted to, start at the earliest, in so many words, and kind of work forward. And the first one I watched was one I'd always heard about, and it's from 1971. It's Nicholas Roeg's Walkabout, and it tells the story of a teenage girl and her young brother who basically get left for dead in the outback and are just kind of wandering through it. The title gets its term from what?
I'm so glad I didn't watch this one. This sounds dour as fuck.
I don't know if it's dour. It's visually very interesting. I liked it a lot.
I say that at the jump, by the way.
Go ahead.
Before we get into all of them, these movies are. There's a bleakness to even the funny ones. There's kind of this desolate.
But I think there's a gallows humor type thing in Australia. Think about it. You got the beautiful coasts and then the void in between. And that's what Walkabout gets into. Walkabout takes its title from something apparently the Aborigines there do, is when a boy is kind of coming into manhood, he goes on a walkabout for like 6 months or 6 weeks. It's a long time. But he just goes out into the outback to live or die.
Mm.
And you got to, that's it. And then you can come back, I guess, at a certain point. But it's a really strange beginning because it seems like there's this businessman father and he takes the daughter and the son out for like a picnic out in the outback. And then he starts shooting at them. He's like, all right, come back here. Like, and he's trying to kill them. And then, he kind of just says, fuck it, and kills himself. And then they are left to wander.
In their own walkabout.
Yes, indeed. And it's just a great example of how fucking alien so much of Australia is. It's like an alien planet, man.
Yeah.
And Rogue shoots it really well. I mean, he was a cinematographer. I think this was his first time as director.
Okay.
If it had a script at all, it was a very sparse one. But eventually, as they're wandering, someone else wanders up to them, and it's a young Aborigine lad and speaks no English. I'm not going to attempt to do their language. I don't want to, be insulting here or anything. But he kind of helps them. And the rest of the movie is just the three of them kind of wandering around.
And that gentleman later became an actor, correct?
Yes.
He appears in quite a few things.
And he didn't speak English at the time of the movie either. So it's an interesting, it's one of those things where it's almost a silent film in a sense. And it's just very impressionistic. And like I said, it's such a cool look at Australia as it's an alien planet, dude.
Yeah.
It's unreal. And they're two like suburban Australian kids, and they have nothing. They're walking with nothing. They get like real quick. They're like, oh, we're about to die. Mm. And then he appears at just the right moment.
This
essentially
is how Crocodile Dundee feels in the second one when he goes to the big city.
You know, I don't remember. I don't know if I've ever seen the second one.
You know, I was going to suggest maybe throwing one of them in, but I figured there'll be a Paul Hogan. Same thing with Yahoo Serious. I'm like, we'll be coming back to Yahoo Serious.
Dude, we'll be coming back to Australia.
Yeah.
Like, I fucking love the place. I always liked it, but after watching, like, all the movies and stuff and getting immersed in Australian, mm-hmm. like, you know, cinema, yeah, yeah. Oh, man, dude, I'm a huge fan
and
of it.
And I really want to do a Young Einstein later on.
Yeah.
So
we'll sure. We'll get to that. But, yeah, Walkabout's good, man. The performances are really good from, you know, like I said, very inexperienced actor. The young boy, mm-hmm. who is a young boy, is Rogue's son.
Okay.
The Aborigine, like I said, doesn't even speak English. He's great in the film. And it's sad. It's beautiful. It's inspiring. It's interesting. It's a great movie. I don't know. It's one of those movies. You know, it's not one you fucking, not like a crowd pleaser necessarily.
Sure.
You want to call it an art film or whatever. Sure, fine, whatever. But definitely one to check out. Yeah, Walkabout.
Cool.
And so here's the moment where I can... I texted Joe when he gave me his thoughts on 1975's Picnic at Hanging Rock by Peter Weir. And I just said, your brain's fried. You're a Philistine. Because you didn't like it.
My brain might have been fried. And it might have been like, I was watching all these nice, exciting Australian movies. And this one, I was just like, ugh. This reminded me of Daisy Miller. It was just like, I just wasn't feeling it, man. I love Peter Weir, too. Like, I love...
Peter Weir is a fantastic director. Did you see Gallipoli?
No.
Oh, Gallipoli's fucking good. Another Mel.
Yeah.
It's fantastic, Gallipoli. It's a beautiful...
Dude, the man, he directed one of the greatest films of all time in the history of the medium is The Truman Show, I think. It's up there.
But
as
I
one
mean,
of those
he did
great...
Master and Commander.
Of course, Master and Commander, Witness, Dead Poets Society. We're going to talk about The Year of Living Dangerously, but...
Peter Weir's almost like an underrated director, in my opinion.
Incredible
like,
director.
The batting
incredible.
Average is insane. Picnic and Hanging Rock. All right.
What I know I texted Ryan with this. I said, I've never seen a film about missing people that's less interesting. I love missing people. I love
Do
it.
You?
It's one of my favorite things. Especially unexpected missing, like complete without a trace. I love that
yeah.
stuff.
Yeah. So this movie scratched an itch for me that's, I'm going to get to it in a second, and you're going to start looking at me like, what the fuck's wrong with you? A few of you listeners out there might be familiar with what I'm going to talk about, but Picnic and Hanging Rock takes place turn of the century, 1900 around. Mm-hmm. The girls' school, boarding school, they go out for the proverbial picnic. Yeah, not proverbial. They go out for
more
a picnic.
Like a boarding school, because
a board.
Yeah.
But a literal picnic at Hanging Rock mm-hmm. National Park, whatever. It's this old, basically a
volcanic,
you know, kind of eruption turned into rock, you know, big thing. So they all go out there and three of them, along with one of their school teachers, disappears mm-hmm. without a trace.
Mm-hmm.
No trace at all. They were kind of just climbing up the mountain, if you want to call it that, and they're gone.
And the annoying friend survives and comes back.
Oh, the fat one.
Why
couldn't
she go missing?
Edith sucked.
Yeah.
Didn't like her.
My first problem, like...
No. I didn't like her as a person. It was a fine character.
I see.
I don't need to like these people. But yeah, of course I didn't like her. But
continue.
So, now bear with me here, listeners and Joe. There's a guy called David Politis. And he's an ex-cop, I think. But he came on my radar because I used to listen a lot to Coast AM, the overnight, you know, supernatural radio show with Art Bell. And I think Art Bell had left at this point, but they start having this David Politis guy on. And he's a researcher. And he comes across these missing people things, these disappearances that are very, very unexplained. And they all seem to cluster around national parks in America and other places, too. But he was primarily researching America. So he has this whole series, Missing 411. He documents these, you know, disappearances.
Yeah.
And they're very peculiar. Like, not only is it people disappearing without a trace, but it's people disappearing, then weeks later reappearing.
Mm.
They can't remember anything. You know, they don't know what's going on.
Sure.
They, you know, and they should have died.
Mm-hmm.
You're not eating.
Mm-hmm.
You're not drinking. Like, you should be dead.
Right.
like moments where it's like, you know, a kid's, you're looking at a kid, all of a sudden he's gone, shit like that, right? So I'm watching Picking and Hanging Rock, and I'm like, it's fucking Missing 411. And not only that, I'm like, you know, a lot of people think they want to go the Bigfoot route, like Bigfoot snatching them up or something.
I'm looking at this guy's Wikipedia page right now. Before he got into this, he was an author of several Bigfoot and Sasquatch books.
So right.
Now, his reputation precedes him.
The great thing about Picnic at Hanging Rock is, and this is where it's like things get so weird, because I believe this, basically.
Mm-hmm. So, conspiracy guy.
The author is with Joan Lindsay, because I lost my notes here.
There's like seven books he's written here.
No, Picnic at Hanging Rock.
Oh.
Not him.
Who, what, authored the screenplay?
The book.
Oh, yeah, Joan Lindsay.
Book is based on the book by, or the movie's based on the book by Joan Lindsay. And, you know, she said it came to her in a dream, basically. And she just hammered it out in 2 weeks. And she had a chapter that ends it, that explains the disappearance.
Mm.
And, you know, when the fat girl comes back, she says, like, everyone's like, what did you remember? Anything? And she's like, no. She's like,
I remember the Alamo.
That's good. Yeah. But, like, weird things, like, you know, what happens is, like, you know, they're all at the park, and then all of a sudden, like, they all fall asleep. Everyone falls asleep. The clocks all stop at 12. Weird shit like that. So, to me, it suggests some kind of magnetic disturbance, you know, with the volcanic area of it.
Yeah.
Time rift, almost, which essentially is the last chapter she had in the book, which her and the publisher agreed they should not put in there. It essentially was that. It was a time rift that the girls got trapped in, and they just didn't make it back out.
Mm.
And I believe in that shit, man. There are portals. There are slips. There are rifts. Like,
I think there's definitely unexplained phenomenon that we'll never comprehend.
When you look at that Missing 411 thing, I mean, some of it is so beyond the realm of possibility, and it's happening. It happened.
Yeah.
Like, now, why it happened, who knows? But, like, the fact that it's clustering around national parks and stuff, through this movie, I'm watching it, and I was like,
okay, so that's why you were a little bit more invested from the get-go.
Probably,
with it.
But
okay.
I think from a cinematic point, it's fantastic filmmaking.
I'm not saying it looks bad or anything. It just, I don't know. I thought it was kind of boring.
I was interested. That's fine. You know, I'm not going to knock it too hard.
Trust me, I'm in the minority here. This is an acclaimed movie.
It's considered a complete classic.
Yeah, I can respect that.
Mm-hmm. I think before this, Weir did a film called The Cars That Ate Paris.
Okay.
I think it might be okay. I don't know.
This was like, this began the Australian New Wave too, right? I mean, this was like this, one of the...
I mean, if Mad Max did, this was the artistic achievement. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Like, it's fondly remembered. I think Amazon just did a 6-part remake.
Oh, yeah, I did see there's another one, yeah.
Yeah.
There's also another film we're going to talk about. There's a remake.
Is there?
What is the other one?
What's the other one?
We'll get to it. I don't want to spoil it now.
But yeah, dude, Picnic at Hanging Rock. I mean, I loved it. I loved how everyone, like I said, is reacting to it. I loved the mystery of it. I loved how it wasn't
resolved.
I love
Jackie Weaver, by the way. She's great.
She's phenomenal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everyone's great. The cast is great.
They're all good.
Performances are great.
I can see how you thought it was slow. And like,
it's just a little slow. It wasn't what I really wanted out of it. I think that's what it, you know what I mean? Because I was like, when I read the description, I'm like, wait, ooh, missing persons, coming of age. And I saw the PG rating. I'm like, eh. Like, I love my missing persons stories to have a rational explanation.
Right, and I could see how you'd be a little disappointed by that. Apparently,
yeah.
Peter Weir, like, loved that.
He's thinking,
American audiences, like, were pissed.
I'm
and he
sure.
was like, all right, then.
Yeah, that's what you shoot for. Yeah. Whenever American audiences get pissed.
You got to piss off a whole continent. That's
what
I hope me and you can do one day.
It.
We probably won't do it on this show. It's going to be a love fest.
And it won't be Australia, because we love...
We love our Aussies, we do. But I just... I love the, you know, a lot of people say like, oh, it has this like undertone of like awakening of female sexuality. I didn't really get,
yeah, I didn't
that,
get that
from
at
it.
All.
I didn't really
get the coming of age element. I know
no.
that's like part of it. I mean, I guess like
I didn't at all
with the girls like not coming back to the school and the school kind of like getting shut down.
Yeah, the school
like,
was fucked at that
yeah.
point. They started getting like less tuitions and stuff. And I like how Joan Lindsay though, like, I think in the beginning of her book, she goes, is this real? Is this like, she's like, I'll leave that up to you. And like her whole life has been plagued by people going like, did it happen? Did
yeah.
it actually happen? To the point where I thought this was a true story before I watched it.
It's framed in a very legitimate way that you would think it is.
Apparently, I think one of the actresses is like, I won't go back there. She's afraid of it.
Really?
Like, yeah. But I love it, man. I was so surprised
that... The Sarah character has a really great arc.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's a lot of good stuff in it.
Birdie,
mm-hmm.
Her brother, who's played by, God damn it, I forget his name. He's a great actor. He popped up in Wolf Creek.
Oh.
He was that, you know, the crazy outback guy.
I kind of watched that movie.
And then he was in Django. He was one of the slavers at the
end.
Oh,
nice.
Yeah.
Where Quentin did his Australian accent, man.
All right, black.
Yeah, we go.
Oh, man. But I don't know. I thought it was phenomenal. I really, really enjoyed it. I didn't mind the slide.
I will revisit this movie
100%. Like I said, it scratched that itch, and I was so surprised.
It was sandwiched in the middle of these movies for me, so it...
I can see how you thought it was a little, you know...
Yeah.
But moving on, I guess. Do you have anything else to say about Picnic at Hanging Rock?
You convinced me to give it another shot, and I will.
God, check out that Missing 411 stuff. If you like Missing People stuff...
I will.
Dude.
I like that shit.
It's compelling. You could probably go on YouTube, too, and like...
Watch some stuff.
No, his old...
it's a wormhole.
Coast to Coast interviews. Because that's what got me into it. I'm like, holy fuck. I introduced it to a friend who I'll bring up later. He had become obsessed with it to the point where everyone's like, dude, stop talking about this. It's insane, dude.
I bet.
Because when you start looking into, like, it's the national park thing and, like, how it's, I don't know, it's high strangeness. But, man, I really liked Picnic at Hanging Rock. We're going to stick with Peter Weir, 1982, The Year of Living Dangerously, starring Mel Gibson. Sigourney Weaver.
Earlier this year, or maybe late last year, I read The Rum Diary. Mm. This reminded me a lot of the spirit of Hunter S. Thompson's, not so much the movie.
Spirit, though. I can see what you're saying.
Of that. Down his luck reporter in a strange land, trying his best to make connections and be seen as legitimate.
Yeah.
I liked it.
I liked it, too. I didn't love it. I like that it really did portray journalists as like just really pieces of shit and self-serving and, you know, ready to drop you at a fucking, you know,
sell any connection they have down the river just to make a story.
I mean, what obviously puts this movie over the top is its Oscar winning performance for the character Billy Kwan, who
is loosely based on Gilbert Gottfried.
I mean, you could have played the role. Ah, Guy,
the guy Hamilton. Levity.
That's the it's set in Indonesia during right before a
what a choice though
an uprising.
Now we've talked about actress Linda Hunt. It's still one of my favorite quotes. I forget what the exact, but we were talking about Popeye, and you were like, I don't know what she has, like something wrong with her. I don't know. You got like real creepy. You're like, I don't know. I used to look her up a lot. Like, it was just so funny we talked about, because she looked like she's 82 in Popeye.
Yeah,
and she wasn't. She was only like 30 then.
Right,
but
She plays Billy Kwan.
She plays a little Chinese man.
Yeah, and it's not like, oh, is this a woman? No, it's a little. Well, he's Chinese Australian.
Yeah,
but he's Chinese.
He's Chinese.
It's the only role, well, at least that won an Oscar for someone that's playing the other gender.
Mm.
And man, if it doesn't fucking work, the makeup's a little hinky.
Yeah, there's only so they don't want to go Mickey Rooney with it in a way.
It's not offensive in any way.
It's just, again, it's because originally a male was cast, I think, and it didn't work out. And just like then Linda Hunt ends up auditioning.
Not only that, you know who else auditioned for it?
Gilbert.
No.
Who?
Wallace Shawn.
Ah.
And Bob Balaban.
I could see what they were going for, though.
It would just be, can you imagine Bob Balaban playing Chinese? It's just funny. But here's the thing, though. Why not? And this is the thing I always come back to. This is a fantastic performance by a woman. Not like I said, it's just a man. Mm-hmm. Like, you're not supposed to think it's a woman or anything that.
Yeah.
But I always go back to like this whole thing of like everyone's so like only this can play that, or only a black guy can do Dr. Hibbert on The Simpsons or whatever. And I'm like, if you go down that route, you don't have Pacino playing Scarface.
Mm-hmm.
Fucking everyone loves it.
Yeah.
You don't have that now.
No.
Because he's not Cuban.
Yeah.
Fuck that.
No, that's what acting is.
Right.
It's disappearing.
Yes.
It's becoming someone you're not.
Thank you. Yes. And I mean, the Billy Kwan thing puts it over top. Such a great character.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, it's on the kind of the cusp of a...
No disregard to her, but she's kind of like ambiguous with her gender to begin with.
For
so
sure.
It's
100%.
It works.
The Tilda Swinton fashion.
Yeah. That's where it's like, for me,
she's
I even texted you before. Watching it, I didn't realize that it's supposed to look... I mean, Billy, that's another thing. The name is not... And I don't think... It doesn't really matter at the end of the day.
It didn't matter to me. But did you not realize it was a woman? Is that what you said to me? Like, it took me an hour to realize.
Well, I know it was Linda Hunt. I didn't know that she was playing a man.
Gotcha.
You know, I thought it was like just this, you know, ambiguous kind of character. It can be. It's not. It's not, it doesn't matter. That's what I'm saying.
But it was clearly a man.
Yeah. After a certain point, when they start referring to him as he,
right.
That's where I'm like, oh, okay, it's not. Yeah. I got it really quick. But initially,
yeah.
I didn't understand.
Well, I mean, is that just maybe the sign of the times that you're living in? That you're too. Like the filter you're
that
like,
too,
taking
of course.
Things through?
Yeah. Well, because I'm honestly surprised that there isn't the outcry that exists today over this shit, that people haven't tried to like retroactively affect this movie. I think that was what was surprising me more. I'm like, I'm surprised I haven't heard. Like,
I'm not going to say it's a forgotten film, but I mean, how much do people talk about The Year of Living Dangerously?
I'll tell you what, I would love to read the book. That seems right in my alley.
Like, it probably would be, yeah.
If it's first person, especially, I'd be willing to bet it probably is.
It looks great.
Yeah.
It's really of its, like, it gets the place, right? Even though it wasn't filmed in Indonesia.
There's also some very jarring imagery in this movie in terms of bodies and children and. The depiction of this, what seems like, you know, a terrible place. It's very, very, it's not, you don't really see those images in mainstream film.
Yeah.
You
know? No.
We're going to keep hitting this.
There was a freedom to do things.
Yeah.
God, was 82.
Right.
That many years ago that you're just not getting away with anymore. Yeah. For better or worse, I'd say for worse, but I don't know, man. There's that
Sigourney Weaver's great.
Like, let me go back to Walkabout. Like Jenny Agutter, I think that's how you say her last name. It's an odd name. She's 16, 17 in the movie. She's nude in it.
Mm-hmm.
She's swimming.
Mm-hmm.
It's not sexual.
Yeah.
But you can't fucking do that today. I don't even know. I mean, it's a Criterion release, so I guess it's you get away with it. But like, is that...
There's been a lot of controversy about that Romeo and Juliet movie. You
right,
know,
Olivia Hussey.
Yeah.
Sure. I mean, they were showing that in school when I was in school.
Yeah, same with me.
And I think sometimes they'd be like, all right, I got to skip this part or whatever.
Ryan, go to the bathroom.
The classroom goes and brushes their teeth. Class. But, look, there is that thing where it's the internet, quite frankly, because the Jenny Agutter, she said, she's like, at the time, she's, you know, I was very shy. I didn't want to do this. But she's like, after the fact, you know, I was okay with it. But now that the internet's around, everyone can see.
She's 33 in this movie. Sorry, I just
Linda
did
Hunt?
That math.
Linda Hunt?
Yeah. She's 45 and this is 78. She's probably 32. She's my age during this movie.
Mm.
Why, she just always has looked like she's 61 years old.
I think, I'm not going to say she has a condition, but when you're that diminutive, like you're going to have a little, it's that, what is that fucking aging disease? She doesn't have it. Oh my God, I can't,
the Jack disease.
The Jack disease, essentially. Yeah. You're going to look a little, you know, your body's not fully formed, essentially. But look, the internet ruins a lot of this shit. Where you can't do that. And like, we're so weird about sex anymore and sexuality. And I just think we're very, unfortunately, demented in that case. But I always think back to Mulholland Drive with David Lynch. You know, Laura Elena Herring has some pretty, you know, she's full frontal nude in that movie.
Yeah.
And at the time he was like, I think he blurs out her lady parts, not her tits. But he was like, and he said, I'm doing it because of the internet. And you know what? Good for him. Because fuck it, like,
yeah.
He doesn't want to do that to her.
Yeah.
She's putting it on the line
right,
him as an actress.
Yeah.
Why, like, you know.
Yeah, I agree.
Oh, why? So I'm going to blur my own movie.
Yeah.
Why? Well, so you can't see a pussy online? Like, fuck you. Like, you know, watch the movie. Enjoy the movie.
Right.
So I don't know. It's a weird thing. It's just sometimes things are of the era.
Yeah.
But you're living nature.
That's another thing, too. Like, you know, no one really foresaw that you'd be able to dissect a film in the way you can dissect it today.
No.
Especially in the 70s.
No. I mean, think about it. You saw the movie and that was it.
Was it?
It was in the theater. It was out of the theater. You're out of luck. Maybe it gets replayed again.
Right.
Maybe it gets on TV.
Which
maybe.
Is going to be censored and edited. And yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, it was a good, it was an interesting movie.
It is.
I feel like it's a movie that you don't see a lot of anymore. I don't know if it's because it's boring or not boring. And that's not the right word, but like a slice of time and a place that you maybe aren't interested in. You know what I mean?
That makes sense. Yeah. I could agree with that.
But Peter Weir, dude.
He's something.
He's good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, moving on.
Your recommendation from 1997, directed by Rob Sitch.
That's next. Maybe we made that jump. This was a movie I had seen years ago, The Castle, which is, I don't know, I just feel like I used to love finding quirky kind of foreign yet English-speaking comedy movies.
Sure.
And there's a few. I mean, even the poster says this year's Full Monty. They were trying to really hype it up as the next big comedy. I'll be interested to get your take on it, but I really enjoyed it.
Give them the plot.
The plot is it's this family named the Kerrigans. They live in like a suburb, and they're just
right abuts next to an
airport.
Yeah, yeah, it's a backyard.
Yeah, and but the great thing about the Kerrigans is the dad is Daryl, played by Michael Caton. He is just enamored with life. There's no downside to his life. The fact that he lives next to this airport where planes routinely run over the house.
He's inspired by it.
He loves it.
They live under electrical
lines. Giant fucking electrical lines. It's such a shitty area.
The progress of humanity.
But it's such a optimistic character. He's wowed by everything. His wife, like, if she makes, like, what's this you whipped up here? Like, ice cream? Oh, that's really great. Like, who needs to go to a restaurant when you have this? Like, he just is so easily impressed. And it turns out that
it's like eminent domain.
They're going to take the group of like four or five people that live in this development. They're going to take their homes because the airport wants to expand. And he, you know, this simple tow truck driver goes up against this
global, multi-billion dollar
corporation
to try
to save this property. And it's kind of, it's very like almost mockumentary.
A little bit.
It walks the line very much.
Because it's got the young son kind of narrating.
Giving like the story. But I'm amazed at the amount of like, just like not huge belly laughs, but little chuckles that they kind of weave into this movie. And it really is just, it's a very simple story about this guy who's just trying to save his home. And the whole thing is about, he wants to convey that it's not about the money. Stop trying to offer me more. They keep coming back and trying to offer him more money. He's like, no, it's my home. Like, this is where my kids are born. It's a very simple story.
All his
memories are there. It's like, he doesn't want anything. He just wants to keep his home. And there's, you know, he goes through several ploys. There's like, of course, there's people that try to threaten him and bribe him. And it's just, he holds his ground. And he's got a very eclectic family. It's three sons. One of them's in prison.
One of them's Anthony Simcoe. He's the one that's always looking for a deal.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, Dad, look at this. Some guy's selling jousting lances. Yeah.
Like, they don't need them, but the fact that it's a deal.
But he's played by Anthony Simcoe, plays Dargo on Farscape.
And okay.
I heard on our Patreon episode, I was saying that the great thing about Farscape was it was all filmed in Australia. So all of space is, every alien is just Australian.
It's just Australian.
It's fucking amazing,
dude. Sounds amazing.
It's so good.
And Eric Bana.
First
we're going to come back
role.
To on this. And yes. He's the husband, the Greek husband, Greek-Australian husband of the daughter.
The dad's giving the toast. He's just like, now I know you Greeks have a reputation. And he's like, the kid's narrating. He's like, I think at first they thought he was taking a piss, but then they realized, you know, he wasn't. I should have been, as I'm watching this, I'm like, I should be annoyed by this film. I was grinning the whole fucking time.
Yeah, it's charming.
I loved it.
Yeah.
It's his unrelenting optimism, his happiness.
It's so refreshing.
His simple joys.
Yeah.
It's so good, man.
Yeah.
It's not the greatest film.
No.
It's not the funniest film. It's so fucking enjoyable, though.
It's also worth noting that the name Kerrigan comes from the fact that they actually found a towing company that was willing to let them use their trucks.
Oh, the budget on this thing
it's
was
so
almost
small.
Non-existent. But, man, it's so positive.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you think of me, it could make me sick.
That's true.
I got a little choked up at the end. When he wins the court case.
Yeah, spoilers.
I'm sorry, dude. Like, I was like, holy shit. Like, this movie's great. It's like, this is an enormous film in Australia.
Bug Tingwell plays the, they actually end up.
The barrister.
He inadvertently meets this actually really seasoned, impressive barrister who takes the case on for free.
Yeah. He doesn't know who he's talking to.
No.
He's just like, you know, bullshitting with him.
Talking like he's a regular, you know, as he does to everyone. He's just friendly. He's nice. But you know what I mean? It's I'm amazed at how many chances they find to be funny with that.
Yeah.
Because you think it gets stale. This guy who's just so positive and optimistic.
Well, they
could
take a lot of easy shots where it's like, hey, isn't this they're poor and stupid, and they find like this shit like great, because every little trinket he gets, he's like, oh, that's going in the pool room.
Yeah,
like it's a place of
that's
high
another
honor
thing too. That's it's like a Seinfeldian Frank Costanza's pool room. It's this tiny little room.
Yeah,
and not only that, he keeps adding shit into
and
it,
and it's like the balls are fucking the table's slanted, but it's so, he's so endearing.
Yeah.
He's not annoying at all.
No.
It's fucking...
It's the performance, too.
I was stunned at how much I liked this movie. Now, like I said, this is major in Australia, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is like a classic.
This is like one of those big comedies for
it
them.
It makes you... Like, this is why I love Australians. I watch this movie and I love this attitude. And it's like a Devil May Care, but at the same time, it's so... He's so happy about every little accomplishment of his kids. He's like great dad. I think it's just nice watching that. Like, what a great guy. Like,
I love the scene when
he wins he's losing. He's horribly. Like, there's no way he's going to. I love the dumb Italian lawyer they get.
Oh, yeah, that's great.
He's great.
Yeah, he's fucking up so bad.
So he's like, I can't do this case. Yeah. Like, I'm way out of my league here, mate.
Yeah. I love when he's like, I forget how the Australian court system, what they call it, but there's a respondent. They're like, oh, we choose in favor of the respondent. He's like, yes. He's like, no, that's not us.
Yeah.
It's like, well, we're responding to them.
Yeah. Yeah. Dude, I was, this is a great movie, man. It's just, it's low key enjoyable.
Yeah.
Like when
the scene when the cop shows up and is like, now, where were you tonight? Did you happen to, because at one point, like a thug shows up and threatens them.
Yeah.
So he responds by, I guess that's the home of one of the
executives
at the airline, and he takes their front gate. He rips it off
with his tow truck.
And a cop shows up the next morning and is like, "Yeah, I know. What are you doing? Where were you last night?" He's like, "Oh, I was at home. You could talk to anyone." So this conversation about like, "I didn't do anything of the sort." And then at the end, he goes, "All right, and take the gate around back."
Yeah,
stuffed it in the front lawn. But like, the whole town is just like they know him. It adds such a level of community feel to it.
It just, it gets past that lovable loser thing where it's like you're not pitying these people because they don't pity themselves.
Right.
He is the king in his castle. He couldn't be happier.
Yeah.
All the little things add up to this great thing for him. And yeah, it's a shithole. Like, yeah, you know what I mean? It's a mess. He's kind of an idiot.
Yeah.
He's a ne'er-do-well, whatever you want to call him. But like, he just never relents. And it's so earned at the end. Mm. That's the other thing, too. Like that respondent thing you think. It's like, well, we rule in favor of, I forget the other thing.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, we lost again.
Yeah, same
like,
thing happens. It's great.
Oh, mate, you won.
Yeah.
And I love how, like, the lawyer, the idiot Italian lawyer, is helping the actual barrister. And he just is handing him, like, fucking brilliant.
Yeah.
After the end. It's so
like he's
good.
Actually passing really important papers.
But then, like, they become friends. Like, he's got the Bonnie Dunes.
What does he say, too? I forget when they end up losing the case. He's like, oh, fair play to you. And then he just says something like, and fuck off or something
dickhead.
Like that. Yeah.
You dickhead. Because he comes out, like, he's got the one son in jail because he fell in with the wrong crowd. He knocked off a convenience store.
Yeah.
Just, I love that. The guy in jail. It's very, it's an understated film.
Yeah.
Where it could have went, whoa, right. I'm the crazy dad. An American version of this would have been fucking
God,
terrible.
Imagine?
But it's so understated and so nice.
That's too, when the guy showed up to threaten him, and all of a sudden the son just comes with the rifle.
Yeah.
And he, at the end, he's like, where'd you get it?
Yeah.
How much? Like, he's instantly like, it's great.
Well, I heard
little
too, because
like
he keeps coming back with the barter deals, and though his response is always, he's dreaming. So apparently the house, like that and Bonnie Dunes, their little like getaway house on this shit lake, people would call them and be like, how much do you want for the property? And, you know, someone would give them an offer and go, you're dreaming. I was stunned at how much I liked. Like I said, dude, I got choked up at the
That's
end.
Amazing.
My cold heart was melted. It was great.
Can we? I know we're. I'm going to jump out of order real quick touch on another Australian comedy that you didn't watch.
No, and this is in a mockumentary style.
This is a mockumentary style, but also incredibly optimistic. It centers around a guy who is just, you think is dumb, but his heart is so big. It's Kenny. It's 2006. This is a movie starring Australian comedian Shane Jacobson. This is actually kind of timely because I one semester attended a school called University of the Arts, which
shut
its doors permanently with no notice.
What was the story
earlier
there?
This week. I
no
don't
one
know.
Knows.
I know a lot of people affiliated with it still that were left in the dark. So it's very
weird.
Shitty practice. I don't know what ended up happening. I'm sure we'll get answers as time goes on. But that's where I started my film school career.
They're going to turn it into an AI art center.
Yeah. That's what's going to be, the AI. But
got a big seller, and we do.
We had this class where you would like watch a film of a different genre each week, and then there'd be a discussion later that night in a different, like a, you know, a continuing class. And mockumentaries, it was scheduled that we would watch not for your consideration. Oh, A Mighty Wind, the Christopher Guest movie.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest of that class had just been like period dramas and stuff I hated. So when I saw on the roster that at this date was going to be A Mighty Wind, I'm like, finally, I get to enjoy a movie in this class. Before class, the instructor goes, I decided to switch things up this class period. We're going to watch this Australian movie, Kenny. I was so angry. And I was blown away by how much this movie was.
A little
was,
happy accident there,
it's
mate.
It's just, it's so simple. And it's a very like a similar Borat way, where eventually the character comes to America and they just use real, but not like in a Borat way, like, let's point out how dumb Americans are. It's not like that. It's just they use the real basis of this. It's like a plumbing convention in Nashville that is a backdrop for a good portion of the story. But it's just everyone else is in on it. But he, it's just well done. It's so simple.
One thing Americans, like, we are for a global empire that we are. We're extremely, I've been thinking about this a lot lately. We are extremely cloistered society.
Yeah.
Like, we do not know what the fuck is going on outside. Yeah, yeah. We just don't.
We don't know.
And we don't get it from our news. Please.
Yeah.
No one tells us anything. We have to, like, so anytime I used to see this, like an exchange student would come over or something. If you're from Australia or England, you're going to, dude, we love you.
Yeah.
Like, you are an exotic bird to us, man. So, I mean, I'm sure there was a little bit of that.
Yeah, but. it's just, again, there's an optimistic. His life has gone to shit, this guy. He works with shit. No one takes him seriously. When everyone finds out what he does.
Well, he's a porta-potty guy, isn't he?
He works for a company that manages porta-potties. And so it's just, the whole movie is just situations he keeps getting into about that. And it's delightful. And I revisited it for this. You didn't have time, but I really recommend anyone check it out. Kenny. It's easy. It's tight. Again, what I always yell about on this show about comedies looking too polished and clean for mockumentary. It looks like, you know, it was shot for real. It looks great. It's got a grit to it. It's great.
There's one that makes me think of there's a Canadian one that's kind of a documentary called FUBAR, Balls to the Wall.
I've heard of that, yeah.
Dude, it's fucking funny, man. Yeah. It's really funny.
The more simple it is, the funnier it is. Uh-huh. The fact that they add all these, you know, like the later Office seasons, that HD crisp. No, like, you want it to look realistic.
Agreed.
And you don't want it to look like everyone's wearing makeup and is lit well. Mm-hmm. It's not how it's supposed to look. And this is a prime example of it. It's great. So check it out.
Well, back to 1997. So I have to have some setup here for this. My buddy that I got obsessed with, David Politis, Michael Felton, this is 20 years ago. You know, we're all hanging out, him and the rest of us. And he goes, hey, have you guys ever seen a movie called Welcome to Whoop Whoop?
I was going
to
ask you, how the fuck was this movie on your radar?
And we all look at him, we go, what the fuck are you talking about? Welcome to Whoop Whoop? No, none of us know what you're talking about. We thought, he couldn't remember it either. He's like, it was one of those movies he must have caught 3 a.m. on Cinemax. They were airing it or something. And he's like, I don't even remember if this was a real movie or I dreamed it. Like, he's like, I don't know. Somehow it became available. And all of a sudden we're like, Felton, Welcome to Whoop Whoop. He's like, it's real. It's a real movie. I wasn't dreaming it. This is from 97. It's written and directed by Stephen Elliott, who probably is most famous for the movie he did previous to this, The Adventures of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert. I think I won an Oscar, too, for costume design. Check it out, because it's got Hugo Weaving and Guy Pearce as drag queens. I mean,
that's
got to
be good.
It's got to be all right. But I had brought this up to him recently. I'm like, dude, I'm rewatching Welcome to Whoop Whoop. And he's like, oh, yeah. He's like, he described it perfectly, and I didn't even think about this. It's Australian Nothing But Trouble.
Great way to put it. It happens all the time on the show.
And I had to make you watch it.
Yeah, it's because I said to you, I was really tied up watching these Australian movies, and I texted you and said, is this one worth it? And is it mandatory? And you were like, kind of. Like, all right, that's say enough.
What did you think?
Again, it happens all the time where we do a little movie on one of these catch-ups or something, or on Patreon for the after show, and it's like, fuck, this should have been a main episode.
Welcome to Whoop Whoop.
It's perfect. It would have been a perfect. No one knows about it. No one talks about
it. I have to imagine the Australians know about
it. It's unfairly maligned in terms of its reviews.
People consider this, it has a reputation as the worst Australian movie ever.
It's
not.
No.
It's not at all.
No. I mean, I haven't seen a lot to
but come
know,
on.
But no way can it be the worst.
Did you like it?
I did.
I liked it too. I think it's great.
I was really, really worried at the opening scene. I was like, what is this going to be? I almost gave up.
It starts in New York with Jonathan Shake. Skeksh? How do you say his name?
I don't know.
Most people would know him as the lead singer of the band in That Thing You Do.
Mm.
I think he's great in this movie. He's a great comedic actor.
He reminded me of that guy you like from the Buffalo. What is his name? Vincent Gallo.
Did he really?
Yeah, for some reason.
Okay. I'd love to see Vincent Gallo do a straight comedy.
I know, right?
But I thought he was hilarious in this movie. But it starts off in New York. He's in an alley trying to sell these rare Australian birds to some women who want to buy them. And he gets, you know, he has this thing. He's like kind of a con man. So, like, you know, he owes people money. They show up to try to kill him. His weird girlfriend kills them. And then he flees.
Thank God she's out of the movie because I was so worried it was going to be
and
like.
And then there's that dumb gag where, like, the birds are flying around Manhattan and every American has a gun. So they're all shooting at the birds. But then they get out, and he flees to Australia. Thank God.
Yeah.
And then the movie becomes this fantastic odyssey.
It's a lot of fun.
It's a great fucking flick.
Yeah. And the great, what's his name? Rod Taylor.
Daddy-O. He plays Daddy-O.
Like, at times charming, but, like, cynical and sinister. Gross. And, yeah. Oh, my God.
His last film role was as Winston Churchill in Inglourious Basterds.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, that's a great way to put it is Australian nothing but trouble.
Dude, it really is.
Because, go through the plot. I mean, with this, so you have this
town. So he flees to Australia, mm-hmm. and then he's got, like, you know, a little Winnebago or something, and he stops at a gas station, and he picks up an Aborigine, and this girl, this young girl, I forget her name, is it Susie or Sally?
Something like that.
But it's run down Australia out back. And they drop off the Aborigine. He's going to look for the Big Red. And it's like, what the hell's the Big Red? And she's like, I forget what she said. She's like, oh, some dumb Abbo story or
Angie,
something.
Angie, by the way.
Angie, that's what it was. And she's kind of a nut. You know, she's like sprightly, but kind of weird.
Yeah.
And she wants to see the sea. And also, she fucks his brains out. And, you know, so she's kind of...
Multiple
times in multiple places. But he takes her to the sea. And she's like, do you love me? He's like, I love you, Angie. Like, once again, he is great in this. His facial expressions and his physicality. And he's kind of rubbery.
Yeah.
I just really liked him. Anyway, she knocks him out. And when he wakes up, he's in this odd bed in this weird shack in a town called Whoop Whoop, which apparently is colloquial for the boonies, out in the sticks.
Sure.
Yeah, you're out in Whoop Whoop. You're out in the nowhere. But it's this village that was built on the side of an abandoned mine, asbestos mine.
Right.
And they make dog food there to sell, I guess, to fucking, you know.
Out of dead kangaroos.
Dead roo.
Road-killed kangaroos.
Yup.
Oh, fuck. You skipped.
What did I skip?
Wake and Fright.
Oh, that's what we skipped.
We'll come back to it after this. I'll just pump it up.
Because I made Joe watch Wake and Fright.
Yeah.
That's what it was.
Yeah.
I couldn't remember.
All right.
But yeah, dude. And then he's just in this village that is insane.
Yeah.
It's demented.
Yeah.
They've all lived there for, it's like maybe 100 people.
They're inbred.
Maybe, yeah. There's some inbredness. Well, kind of.
Well, they've got rules established now.
Because there's a rule. Yeah. Where you can't mess around with kin now.
Mm-mm. Rule number three.
But like, they watch
Rodgers and Hammerstein musicals over and over again.
Over and over.
They have like
the
soundtrack. That's the one thing where I thought maybe this is why this movie is out of print, is because the music licenses.
Dude, you might be right. Because if you look at it, Stephen Elliott has this whole story about how, because a lot of gay men of his era, he was obsessed with like Julie Andrews and these Rodgers and Hammerstein songs. He went to whoever owned the rights.
There is an original Boy George song. Too,
is there?
As well. Yeah.
I missed that one, maybe. Yeah. But he got the rights to the song.
Yeah.
Like he played like a techno edit or something, and whoever had the rights was like, okay, fine, go ahead. I like it. Go ahead. You can use it. So you've got Sound of Music clips in this movie. You know what, dude? You're right. I think that's what
it
is.
It might have something to do with it.
It's got to, because this was hard for me to track down.
Mm-hmm. And that's saying something, because you're the video detective over here.
This, I would say, give your money to if you can find a way to. I think there's a DVD available for it.
I would imagine.
Pick it up. But I don't know. What were your thoughts on it? Because it's just this demented village. And then he's been knocked out, they married him to Angie.
Right, right.
And I love the wedding pictures where he's just unconscious.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So the town is, they've been stuck there for years. They have they don't want to leave. They're all like eccentric, weird people. There's like, you know, there's like a town doctor who's just like, you know, there's a saloon. So it's like there's remnants of some kind of life.
Yeah.
But it's like this almost like apocalyptic. It really does feel like a Mad Max town.
It does a little bit.
And big bold characters, and just he ends up finding a companion in the other sister, who's Crystal. She's like the sane sister, whereas Angie is like out of her mind and more aligned with Daddy-O.
Yes.
Who's played by Rod Taylor, who is just like
demented. Demented performance. It's excellent.
There's another. So what he ends up finding out is that they essentially kidnap people, I guess mostly men, to help populate the town. They don't want to be inbred, so they need like fresh blood to come in. So they have like kind of this thing coming in where they kind of knock out and kidnap people and at one point the other guy tries to escape and gets killed, so it's like he's stuck there.
Mm-hmm. That's the first rule, I think. You can't leave.
You can't leave.
Forget what the second one is.
It's just
the third
like,
one is don't fuck your kin.
another one too where like a dog gets killed, like the cattle dog gets killed, like for because daddy was just an asshole.
Yeah,
like,
well, it was dog day.
It was dog day.
And all the kids can shoot the dogs.
Also, in the beginning, well, you know how like when he's at the selling the cockatoos out of the truck, there's like a woman in like a nice suit. That's Tina Louise, who is the movie star from Gilligan's Island.
Yes.
Yeah.
She's Ginger. No. Yeah. Oh, she's a Mary. Ginger. Yeah. Fucking crazy, dude.
Yeah. So it's like
this movie fucked his career up. I'm pretty sure.
I bet.
It's a huge flaw.
I bet. Yeah, I can't see this movie having any mainstream appeal in the United States. That being said, this is an almost cult classic. Every now and again, we stumble upon these movies where that completely...
I'd be willing to revisit it in a
it
sense.
It might be worth doing in the future.
I love Big Red does show up at the end.
A book.
Which I'm like, what could they...
Yeah, exactly.
The Dead Heart.
Yeah, the Big Red, the giant kangaroo. They're chasing the dump truck or whatever. It's just like...
It's demented.
I was really worried at like the initial like 5 minutes. I'm like, I'm not going to be able to finish this fucking movie.
I had a feeling you'd like it.
And then maybe like, yeah, when they get to the town... It's like, I was in.
Dude, all my friends, when we were watching, I think we had the same reaction where it's like that beginning, we're like, ugh. And it's got that stupid song in the beginning, and it's kind of a dumb opening credits montage. But everyone I know that's seen this movie is like, oh, it's crazy, it's great.
Yeah.
It's fucking great.
It's kind of what I feel like I would feel about that movie Freaked, which we've talked about doing.
Sure,
it feels like similar, like, but like, you have to appreciate the set design, and it's
the set
everything
design
comes
is
together.
Phenomenal.
Really, yeah, nothing but trouble. That's such a great way to put it.
I just love with like the
creepy daddy-o is like
he's so good. I love when he knocks him out at one point with a Vicodin or something, and he's just lying in the muck.
Yeah,
like he's passed out. It's like, all right, get away. His wife's always farting.
Yeah,
so he's like, get away from me.
Also, she ends up dying at a certain point,
and they sacrifice her on the trash
pile. They just burn her. Corpse on top
this
of a
movie
giant
is,
trash
pile. I mean, unknown in the States.
No.
You Aussies, pop in the comments and tell us what you think about this, because Whoop Whoop has to have some cult status over there.
You guys got to check this movie out.
Yeah, if you can really track it down, it's so worth it.
I'm going to see if I can get a copy before we put this out in case we drive the sales to it. Sometimes it's happened where, like,
hey, man.
We've talked about a movie and I'm like, oh, it's out. I'm going to go buy a copy and it's.
It's just so weird because, as far as I know, Priscilla, Queen of the Desert's very fondly remembered. This movie has no reason to be hated or maligned or... It's nasty and dirty, but man, it's visually impressive.
Hats off, I did a video on Trial and Error, which is the Michael Richards, Jeff Daniels video. I can't tell you the amount of comments I got. People like, I had no idea this existed.
Yeah, dude,
I had no idea it existed.
I know. I remember seeing that as a kid, and I really liked it. You know what's funny?
It's good.
I forgot... Charlize Theron was... I say Theron.
Theron.
I think it's Theron.
Theron.
But I remember being angry as a young lad because I was like, she's too pretty. She should be with me. She's very, very...
Your little 10-year-old you was...
Very pretty in that
movie.
But
it's a surprisingly really funny, like...
I remember loving it as a kid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, it just goes to show that there are so many movies out there that just, for whatever reason, they don't hit initially, and therefore there's no... rediscovery of it later on. So it continually gets buried. It gets pushed down and down and down until, and this is, there's other things we talked about, like The Dark Backward and like...
Which I don't understand how that hasn't gotten a reappraisal.
So many of the movies we've talked about have somehow slipped completely under the radar. And this is one
this
where
this is
one
like, we might have to come back to because like it's so needlessly obscure.
Yeah.
It should be way more well known.
Right.
Way more appreciate it. Like you said, the production design alone, they really conceived of that little town perfectly,
it's
man.
Great.
And the Rodgers and Hammerstein stuff. There's that one line, I forget what they're watching, I think it's Sound of Music, but they all have that thing where it's like the nun says, you can't, but it sounds like to them, they all go, you cunt!
Yeah.
It's so good!
They just routinely watch the same movies over and over again. They shout out, they know the words. It's great.
They're all doing little dances with it. It's a fucking great
movie,
man.
And again,
you have
this... character as the straight man.
I think he's excellent in this movie.
He's great.
His career doesn't seem to have done too much. I think he's a great actor.
He's really, really funny in it.
Really funny in it. And not only that, I fucked up. I didn't realize there's an after credit scene.
Oh, is there? I missed that.
So remember like when he's fleeing and she's like, the sister's like, how did you know Angie wasn't pregnant? Because that's how she hooks up too.
Yeah.
She goes, oh, I'm pregnant. He goes, so she told her mom and her mom told him.
Yeah.
Well, there's an after credit scene where they're in New York, like running a pet shop. And she's like, Teddy, get out of here. And she walks out and there's two 15-year-olds there like, Oh, Dad, this is Sonny and Cher. They're two twins. So.
That's great. That's like the Nothing But Trouble ending. We're like, I'm moving in with my son. Yeah. Son-in-law in New York City.
But you got to wonder if Nothing But Trouble was any influence on this, because they are very similar. Because they're, you know, the idea of marriage, like, you know, hooking them in with that.
Yeah.
And I don't know. But, man, please, if anyone's seen this, give us some feedback.
It's also Nothing But Trouble is one that, since we did our episode on the show, I mean, it did get a Blu-ray release and did get rediscovered to a certain extent. So
I want to see Welcome to Whoop Whoop.
I agree.
But let's jump backwards. 30 years, probably. Mm. I think it was 77. I could be wrong.
71.
71. Okay. Ted Ketchoff?
This was, I think, the first one I watched in this, because I read the plot online after you suggested, you were like, I'm watching this movie, so I read, like, the quick IMDb synopsis, and I expected, I even said to you.
We had the same, this happened to me too, but go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, maybe I should read exactly what it says on IMDb, but I thought it would be more like Straw Dogs.
Yeah.
Because it seems like it's this, you know, a guy, the poster is a guy with a gun walking through the outback.
And he's kind of like maybe an intellectual dealing with some backwards people.
So the IMDb one line says, after a bad gambling bet, a school teacher is marooned in a town full of crazy, drunk, violent men who threaten to make him just as crazy, drunk, and violent. Yeah. I don't know why I read too much into that, because it's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
There's no
getting drunk and making bad decisions.
It's just a guy going around. Dude, I needed like a shower after watching this movie. I was just like,
it really is, man.
I was like, it I makes was you, so if you, unnerved.
If you're a drinker too, you're just like, ugh,
oh,
what
my
am I doing?
God, dude, it's like a guy continually making terrible decisions. Terrible decisions.
Imagine getting so drunk. I said this to you. You let a filthy, stinking Donald Pleasance molest you in his disgusting shack.
Well, the ironic part is that, you know, this guy's engaged, or is it...
I think something like
so
that.
So he's a school
he's
teacher.
He's called a sweetie, a Sheila.
There's a whole bunch of backstory, but essentially he's this school teacher who I guess there's been some kind of financial issue, and he has to teach in this, like, small little town away from where he wants to be. And the Christmas holidays are coming up, and he's going to be going to Sydney to spend time with his fiance. But on the way, he stops in a town called Yaba.
First time in the Yaba?
The Yaba. It's
that's what they call it. It's something
it's something
like
else. He just instantly starts to connect with these, like, horrible men. He loses everything in gambling.
Is it some
he
kind
just
of
gets
working
stuck
town?
There. It's like, because I think a big part of their economy is just, like, people stopping on the way to other places.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like a port, if you will,
sure.
City, and it's just he just loses everything. And
there's no
fucking,
port, by the way. This
no,
is out
that's
the
what
desert.
I mean. It's,
yeah,
it's,
yeah, yeah.
But it's like a each guy he meets is worse than the last, and like eventually, it's unlike anything I've seen in a film before.
It's quite a film.
They go hunting kangaroo, and they hunt them.
Oh, they kill them.
No CGI. No.
It's one of those
blowing
things.
Kangaroos.
It goes on too long.
Dude, they're mowing them down.
They really are, dude.
And it's like shot at night with their spotlights, and there's quick cuts of just kangaroos just eating bullets. Like, it's
brutal.
Ooh.
It's totally brutal.
Ooh, and then like I think that's before he ends up getting molested by Donald Pleasance, Doc.
He's great in the movie.
He's great, terrific. But it's like the character is so gross looking,
so slimy, and
everyone
yeah.
just looks sweaty and gross, it's and no one's showered or brushed their teeth. It's like
the sweat and grime on people in this movie, man. It's brutal. It's more so like when you fuck up drinking, like that's what the movie is.
Well, it's like, you know, you had those bad nights where you wake up and go, oh fuck, what did I?
What's this the is perfect like, title? Wake in fright.
This
I have
is
woken
like,
in fright.
But it's like his whole fucking 2 weeks this guy spends every morning is like that until it just starts to blur together.
He's
just like
he's making out with the girl at one point.
Oh, he's just disgusted with himself.
Just
he vomits.
Pukes.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Oh, it's just like it's brutal. It's really is.
It's a great movie, but it is brutal.
Yeah, it's.
So I'm glad you watched
how
it.
How was this on your radar?
Oh, it's a classic. Always,
you always hear
plot. Well, again, it's that Australian New Wave thing. It was one of them.
Ah, okay.
And Scorsese speaks very highly of it. And it just, I had always heard about Wake and
this
Fright.
This was also the other one I was talking about was remade as a miniseries a couple of years ago. Yeah, which I guarantee it's neutered. I don't think
oh,
it has
come
any.
On.
Yeah.
Whew, it's I'm saying you can't. There is that thing where it's like you couldn't make that today. It's like, in this instance, like you can't be gunning down Rue.
No.
You're not. You're
no,
not
I mean,
getting away with
that. You know, it's like when you first see Apocalypse Now and that water buffalo gets killed. You're
right.
Like, this is like multiple. And not only that, you see the corpses and the... I think in Whoop Whoop, they're real.
They might be real. I doubt they were like butchering them for
but I think that.
Well, you know what's funny? There is a tag at the beginning of Whoop Whoop. It's no animals were harmed in the making of this film or humans.
That's great.
Yeah, it is good.
But whew, it's just like. Ugh.
It's an experience. Ugh. For sure. Yeah.
Yuck.
And it's directed by what's his name? I always thought.
Ted Kotcheff?
Who did First Blood?
Yeah.
Who did. God, what was that other one? We just talked about that too.
The Apprenticeship of Duddy Kravitz. You talked about that recently, didn't you?
What? No, I don't even know what that
is. Didn't you talk about this movie? The Apprenticeship of Duddy Kravitz?
No clue.
Maybe it can't, but something else we were doing.
No, there's some other well-known stuff he's done. Oh, no, it was the one we got on Patreon. The Chef. Someone's Killing the Chefs of Europe.
Okay. Also, Weekend at Bernie's.
Oh, that we should really get. Yeah, I love the two of them, but he did Bernie's. I forgot.
It's funny, too, like, because I was, when I was going through this.
Go from Wake and Fright to Weekend at Bernie's.
Tarantino basically said that, like, you know, First Blood is a neutered version of the book on screen. So I'm wondering how the novel is of Wake and Fright. It's probably even more brutal. You know, if he toned things down on First Blood, I'd imagine because it goes places. You know, I mean, it's a very sadistic.
They leave them out there too, don't they?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like they're out killing the roux at night, and this is pitch black in the outback, and then they leave him.
They leave him out there. Yeah.
Fucking wild, man. All right. Well, you want to jump back ahead to 2000 for Chopper?
Oh, Chopper. 2001.
No, 2001. First film of Andrew Dominik.
Mm.
Interesting career. He was pretty roundly acclaimed for the movie After Chopper, The Assassination of Jesse James by the Coward Robert Ford.
I've never seen it, but I've always wanted to.
It's good. You should check it out. Then he was pretty maligned for the next movie, which I love, Killing Them Softly. And then recently he did that Blonde movie, which seemed to be, people were just perplexed by. I don't know. Weird one.
In what way? Because it was just like not what they thought it would be?
I don't think people knew how to take it. It was very, I haven't seen it, but from what I can tell, from what I have seen, it's just very artistic in a way. Very,
that makes sense.
Almost avant-garde.
Mm.
So, I don't know.
Yeah. This was, we talked about it a little bit earlier in one of these episodes. It reminded me of Bronson.
It's very similar.
Yeah.
Very, very similar.
Just like,
it's about, essentially, Chopper was Mark David Reed?
Mark Chopper Reed.
Okay, Mark Reed. He was a notorious in and out of jail prisoner.
Mm-hmm.
And he was just like Bronson, you know, same kind of thing. They just were famous for being in jail, essentially.
Crass and bombastic, but charismatic and well-liked by certain individuals.
Well, the thing about Chopper is, which I can't really... He kind of just went after drug dealers and stuff.
Yeah.
So I don't give a fuck. Kill him. Fuck with him.
And this guy wrote a couple books after his release.
Well,
maybe during, right? Yeah, actually during
he
conviction.
He spent very few years out of jail.
So it's, and I think even Eric Bana spent some time around him.
Yeah.
And that's another thing. Eric Bana, terrific performance.
So good.
Gains a ton of weight and muscle mass and just like transforms the way he looks in the second act of this movie.
He's really good in this movie. Yeah. And I mean, that's why I always would hear about it. I'm like, oh, I got to watch this for him. It's one of those odd movies, though, where it's almost like a slice of their life. So you're not getting the full biography, so you're kind of just dropped in. You're like, what the hell's going on here? And if you don't have, like, Chopper's a big deal in Australia. No one knows who the fuck he is in America. There's no cultural reference to us. So, you know, you're kind of like, huh? But at that said, I still was very...
It grabs you from pretty early on.
Yeah, it's very enjoyable.
There's a prisoner that he's sharing, like, kind of this wreck area with that, you know, don't cross this line. And the next day, he just walks up and stabs the guy, but then instantly feels remorse for it.
It's
like,
so weird.
You're all right there?
Yeah.
You're all right, it'll be all right.
Oh, come on, Keithy, it'll be okay.
And then...
he does that up talk, too, which I really like.
Then he's going to get retaliated. They're going to come after him because this guy ends up dying. So his two close friends, he wants to stage a big fucking... kind of takeover.
Yeah.
And his one, Jimmy, is that the guy's name?
I think so.
Stabs him like, at what seems like a dozen times.
Yeah.
And each time he's just like, what are you doing?
Yeah, why are you doing this, mate?
Like, don't punch. Like, first he thinks he's punching him. And then he just, like, eventually he takes his shirt off. He's got all the bloods pulsing out. But he's just like so calm about it. And like, he ends up surviving, of course.
Yeah.
And then they still won't take him out of the prison. So he fucking has a guy saw his ears off for like the top part of your ear called? With a razor blade. He's like, oh, come on, don't saw it, just do it in one.
Yeah.
And then they finally take him out and put him in like a mental.
His tolerance for pain is ridiculous. And this is fairly true. Like, this shit did happen.
Yeah, he mutilated his ears to get out of like general populace prison.
Yeah. But It's good. It's an entertaining film.
It is.
It really gets over on that performance. It's so, so good. And it's not surprising
What happened to him?
I don't know. He goes from this to Hulk, I think, almost.
I think that did a lot of damage.
He's phenomenal in Troy as Hector. Really good. Really good role.
Ugh, he was in that Chippendale movie.
Huh.
Playing Monterey Jack.
Okay. Oh, it's funny. I know he was in that shitty Funny People by Apatow.
Oh, yeah, he was. He plays the
husband of the one that got away.
Huh. I don't know. This was...
He should be... He should be in more stuff. I love Bana.
Also, this follows up The Castle with him. There's nothing in between. So it's such a drastic...
And it's weird, too. He got the role from this because Chopper himself had seen him on this sketch show, Full Frontal.
Yeah, because he's primarily a comedy actor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's great. Dude, Bana's awesome, man.
Really... Yeah, interesting movie.
I wonder if is he in anything recently? Did he fuck off back to Australia?
He's in looks. I mean, the Chippendale movie, that was a huge.
Of course.
Yeah, it looks like a lot.
How could I forget?
I don't know. He just.
Chow Yun-Fat did that.
Australian film. It looks like a lot of Australian films.
He came over and was just like, dude, fuck America.
Yeah, I mean,
going
I get
back
that.
To China.
But yeah, it's very similar to Bronson.
Breaks the fourth wall a couple times like Bronson.
Mm-hmm.
Which, when did Bronson come out?
That's after this.
Because it really, I'm sorry, man.
I agree.
Bronson does some things where I'm like,
2008
yeah,
is Bronson.
Yeah, you kind of took some things here from Choppa.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I'm surprised it doesn't
Bronson's
get mentioned
good
as
too, by the way.
Bronson is good, but this is like...
Got there first.
Criminals are kind of similar in the way they certain, you know.
But like that end when he shoots the Turk... I remember when they're replaying it and he's like, they're in the bar and he's like, they turn to the camera and the spotlight comes on him. I'm like, there's that whole thing in Bronson where he's talking to the camera. Like,
yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Bronson also whips his dick out at a,
as the Chopper.
Yeah. His big fucking, clearly a prosthetic.
I love how, too, he's like, Chopper's kind of playing everyone. Like, he's telling all the criminals that he's working for the cops.
Mm-hmm.
And then the cops are like, hey, Chopper, mate, are you telling people you work for us? He's like, no. They're like, you don't do that.
Dude, it's great because so many times he shows up to, like, see, this is when he's out of prison, and, like, he gets an altercation. You're like, he's going to fucking kill this person. It's like he does so much. Like, his brain, like, he doesn't, he thinks everyone's, like, a conspiracy.
Yeah.
And, like, he keeps pointing guns. And, like, dude, it's like he's about to pull the trigger. And then so many times, like, oh, I'm sorry about that.
Yeah.
It's like, eventually he starts shooting people. And it's like, it's crazy.
Like, he shoots the one guy. And he's like, all right, stop your whining. And they take him to the house. He's like, I'll take you. I'll throw him in the car. That's so good. Chopper ruled. Chopper was awesome.
Good pick.
Yeah, definitely. I was very happy to finally knock that one off my list. However, we have a new thing that we have to get into.
Yeah, the main attraction.
Indeed.
I wasn't even going to go see this in the theater.
I wasn't either.
And then you were like, I saw Furiosa, and I was like, I think that night I was like, well, I have to go see it.
I was going
to
totally blow it off.
Yeah. But it was the same thing. I heard like the box office numbers were disappointing. So I'm like, I'm interested in it. I'm going to go see it. Very curious to hear your thoughts on this movie.
I thought it was good.
Okay.
And like I was saying on our Patreon thing, we were discussing Mad Max. One, it sucks too because it's like, I thought it was good.
Mm-hmm.
I would like more Mad Max, preferably with Mad Max. That would be nice.
Well, he's in this.
He is in it.
A second.
It was just enough. I did catch that.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't hard. It wasn't like it's very clearly him.
It's definitely him.
Yeah.
He's just up on the hill kind of watching the action. Eating out of a can, I'm pretty sure.
Dog food.
But I'm glad it bombed. And I say that wanting more. I want them to do another one. I want them to do that Wastelands movie. I want to see it. I want it to happen. But Hollywood has to bomb. Everything must bomb. Everything must go. And I was telling you, it's like when an empire falls, they're looting the empire.
Mm.
I think it's all bullshit. I think these marketing, I'm doing air quotes, budgets, people are lining their pockets. Someone somewhere, like, money's not going to the right places. The money laundering is out of control.
Well, that's...
I don't buy it. I don't buy any of this shit.
The thing that is really interesting about... first of all, this movie needed to come out probably 8 years ago. Mm. It was delayed because Miller had issues with the way Warner handled the financing and box office returns of Fury Road.
Shocker.
So that's what I mean. So if this movie had come... Dude, that Fury Road hype, at least 2 years afterwards, it was still there.
You had juice, for sure.
And people were just so into that and rediscovering the older movies. Like, it would have been... Like, we're 9 years later.
Yeah, it's too long. They're waiting too long to do this kind of shit.
Yeah, I mean, because you had the great, what's his name, Immortan Joe, the actor had died. And the guy that does him
Keith Burns.
Yeah, it does a fantastic job.
He's good.
It's the same guy that plays that other wacky guy with the, like, missing an eye with the crazy hair that's in Dementis's gang.
Oh, is it?
That's the same guy.
Oh, is
guy.
It really?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
There's actually a couple scenes where they interact with each other.
We talked
so
about this on Patreon. I love how Miller reuses actors. I like that a lot.
It's great.
I really enjoy that.
And
what did you think?
I liked it.
I liked it too. I thought it was unnecessary.
I thought
to a degree.
I thought there were parts that were a little too ridiculous. I thought the CGI was way more evident this time around.
Yeah, yeah.
I texted you right afterwards.
The Warwick thing was good.
That the first chase scene with the little guy in the
with Praetorian Jack,
great.
Who was a great character.
Great character.
And I really liked how, and I'll shut up for a second after this. I liked how there was
Orson Welles in Mank, by the way.
Oh, was he really? He's good.
He's great.
Tom Burke?
Tom, yeah.
Burke. He's great. He's really good.
Yeah. I saw it on Twitter. Someone compared him to Stacy Keach. And he's got that look of him in this movie.
He does look like Stacy Keach, the great Stacy Keach.
That movie where Stacy Keach plays like a driver, a truck driver. You know what I'm talking about?
Fuck.
What's the name of that movie? Yeah, I'm sorry, guy. Keep talking and I'll...
They could have made it more love scene-y.
And they didn't.
We're going to fall in love here.
Apparently that was Tom Burke's suggestion.
Thank God they didn't. It would have dragged. This movie was too long. It didn't need to be that long.
That's true. I agree with that. Road Games, by the way. I'm sorry. Excellent movie if you haven't seen it.
When you look at a summer movie blockbuster, like, this is fine. This is
exactly what it should be,
And the fact that people didn't go out for it, I will say this, because, you know, you see a lot of this shit, and I have to take issue with it. I'm going to use some terms here that I can't stand. But a lot of people were like, oh, it's woke. It's this. No, it's not. I can tell you right now, if you're worried about that, it's not. But the thing is, I think a lot of people get scared off of...
I hate that word, by the way.
I'm so... I hate it, dude.
We talked a little bit about how you and Bill Maher align up and separate. And so John Cleese was on his podcast, and he was like, I have to tell you, I just take issue with this woke. You're just feeding into them when you keep using this word. Like, it's not representative of what... It's just... Yeah.
I hate to say this. It is. Look, we have to... There's shorthand to everything. So it's an easy way of saying... what's the best way to put it? Just like one, it's doing something for the sake of like, okay, I can see what this is the issue. And it's not existent in this film either. How many, are we not tired of the tiny little girl beating up the 300-pound, 7-foot dude? She's so tough. It's unrealistic. It's stupid. It's just, it takes you out of any immersion you have in the movie. That is not here.
No.
She's not doing that.
No.
She's struggling and using her wits and just being agile. You know what I mean? Like, there's none of that. There really isn't. And so, like, just because a woman is headlining the action picture is not... That's not woke. Mm. Or what?
Oh,
God,
yeah. No.
Makes me sick even fucking saying it. Because there is a legitimate criticism there.
Of course.
But when you boil things down to one word, it's very easy to dismiss it.
Right.
And it's annoying.
It's more layered than that.
It is. It's just, you know... This movie's not woke.
But also, like, I don't know, like, female-driven movies, you know, Alien. I don't know what...
Thank you. Is Ripley woke?
It's like, yeah, exactly.
No.
Like, it's just...
And everyone has no problem with Ripley, but I don't think that's what fucked this movie.
No, again, it was too late.
It was too late, and I think...
It's probably a little too expensive.
So I was seeing little clips, like ads on Twitter, and it did look, like, way too cartoonish. Mm-hmm. Like, silly. They used that little guy.
Oh, yeah.
And who's barely in it. But it looks silly.
Yeah.
And you're like, didn't we see this movie already with Fury Road? And it's like, do we care about
Furiosa?
That's
the other thing, too. Like, we talked about the leap in color grading from Beyond Thunderdome to this. For Fury Road, I mean.
Right.
And this movie feels like such an... Because it is. It's a natural extension of Fury Road. So it looks the same. It feels the same. Characters are the same. But I like what it did differently. I will say the...
Who's the standout?
Chris Hemsworth.
On Dementis?
Yeah.
He was so good at it. I wanted more Dementis.
His intro as like this Christ-like figure.
Yeah, the nose.
The nose is great.
Hysterical.
I was really, really into it. Dude, the scene when he shows up at the Citadel and is like, oh, I'm here with a show. And he's like, pick one. And the war boy jumps down. It's amazing.
Yeah.
It sets up exactly why they have such a handle on it. Like, come on, attack us.
Yeah.
I like the record keeper with all the tattoos.
History
Man. So great.
Good.
It started to lose me. Dude, it was like, I hate to quote Seinfeld yet again, but he yada yada'd over the best part. The war where it's just kind of like, it was 70-day war. They fought for 70 days. Whoop. It's just...
Yeah. Yeah. Also, I have to say this. When they're leaving the green place initially, mm-hmm. like when Furiosa's been kidnapped and the mom goes after her,
yeah.
there's a hilarious shot of a fat woman. What? No.
Yeah.
No one's fat at the... No one's getting fat at the green place, dude. Come on. Like, conserve.
Yeah.
You're not... No. That's what there's you could consider... Well, you know,
there's
a
couple like really wonky, like there was a scene of Dementis. I think it's when he's ramming the gate where it just looks like it's obviously he's not there. He's like, it's like a projection on the windshield. It looked really bad.
Some of it's a little janky.
Sorry, my dog's here for this episode.
And I don't know if that's budget, you know, the less of a budget than Fury. I don't know.
The dogs, the CGI dogs too. That was something that, as I texted you, because I was like, we keep talking about this. So like Wonka had it. And you said it's probably just easier to control. I think that the animal rights laws have just made it really hard to work with animal
probably.
Actors. So I think
to the point where it's like, fuck this.
Yeah, let's just do CGI. And I just don't think we're at a point where it looks good enough yet to pass. Because there's a Harrison Ford movie, The Call of the Wild.
The whole dog was CG.
Yeah. So I think, you know, we're going to see more of that. But in this, like, they try to make it work by giving them, like, half, like, robot bodies and stuff. And... Yeah, I don't know. I will say what else was real. Dude, the transition from Anya Taylor-Joy or the child actress to Anya Taylor-Joy was handled incredibly well.
Yeah.
It was like, and I even was reading something about it where it's like they didn't do a full facial replacement. They just like tweaked the features so the faces align more. So when we do cut to Anya Taylor-Joy, it's not noticeable. And it wasn't.
Yeah.
It was handled very, very well.
I didn't mind it. I liked how she barely speaks in the movie.
That was great. Not
it was
needed.
Good.
Yeah.
It was good. But once again, man, it's...
The credits were... I didn't like that choice to show clips from Fury Road over the credits. I thought that was hokey.
I'll tell you what, though. I hadn't seen Fury Road in a long time. I was like, fuck, I gotta watch Fury Road again. I wanted to watch Fury Road again. Yeah, that is a little hokey, though. Yeah, you're right. You're right.
It didn't need to lead exactly into Fury Road.
The other Mad Max movies did have that credits things where they show, like, you know.
I know, but this was like, not very, like a sizzle reel of the.
Yeah,
it was just very weird.
Dude. It's a good point.
But I liked...
Hemsworth was great in it, man.
Terrific in it.
Terrific.
I wish there were more of him in it. And,
yeah, there was almost too little.
That's what I hated. Like, dude, the part when...
For now on, I'll be called the great Dementis.
When he's going to Gas Town, whatever it is, like the he's setting a trap for them to go to Gas Town. It's good. But we just cut to the narrator again, like, and thus began the 70 Days War. And it's like, no, I want to see the war. Like, there's got to be a better way to do this, George Miller. Like, I know you don't need to, but...
Oh, I didn't like the chapters.
It
was unnecessary.
Yeah.
It was just like, just make the fucking movie. Yeah. I don't need all this.
I mean, it was shot in Australia, though, so you get a lot more...
Apparently, she didn't have a good time.
It doesn't look like it's a fun film set to be on.
You make a good point.
You just sit in this hot car all day.
Yeah, in the fucking sand
and
dirt.
Again, dude, that first scene when the... When they're driving to, I guess they're going to Gas Town. No, they have the food. Wherever they're going, and they're attacked by their like vigilante group of bikers, who's like split from Dementis. It's great.
Yeah.
When they're flying, they have those like parachute things. They're coming in.
Hey, when they're on the war rig.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a great sequence.
It's amazing.
It's a really good sequence. It's edited beautifully.
Yeah. That the blades at the back of the rig.
Yeah.
It's so great.
Yeah, dude. Honestly.
The people hanging underneath the truck. Like man does know how to string together an action sequence, unlike
he really
other
does.
Directors.
It was a lark for me. It was just like, hey, you know, I was at the dinner. Hey, it's this plane. You want to go see it? I'm like, yeah, we do this show.
Yeah.
I'm like, we probably should. We should. One new one in there.
It's nice when we both see a new one to talk about.
And I was pleasantly surprised. I thought it was a little too long.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was a little unnecessary, but that's okay.
Yeah. I thought there were unnecessary scenes, but I thought overall.
A little crinkled here. Enjoy that. The verisimilitude.
Why must you open a condom now of all time? I thought it was just... there were scenes that I felt unnecessary, but overall, the scenes that worked for me really worked, and I was like... Again, that scene where he rolls up with the whole crew to the Citadel.
It's great.
It's like, who's your leader? It's just... Yeah, it's fantastic. And they start to, like... pick them up with claws. Mm-hmm. It was just, it's so, and again, I love Immortan Joe. I love the,
if anything, it was nice to see that.
The weird doctor character that
the
was
organic
like,
mechanic.
Oh,
yeah.
So the characters are great.
Uh-huh. Hey, was he the guy in the second season of Fargo?
Maybe.
The brother.
I don't know.
Who was kind of the heavy.
It's been a while
bear,
since I saw
it.
I wouldn't be able to.
He was a fucking great character in that show. I think that's him.
It could be.
I love that guy.
Everyone was great in this movie. But yeah, the standout. And I love Anya Taylor-Joy.
She's good. I have no issue with her.
I really became a fan of her after that Menu movie that we discussed.
Okay. Yeah.
But yeah, Chris Hemsworth is just
so funny and perfectly cast.
His best performance.
It's one of them. You know? Oh my God.
And he fits into the world so well. You're like, of course, why weren't you in one of these movies sooner?
But it's just something small, like giving him that nose.
Yeah.
It's so, it makes the character that much better, yeah. Man.
I like when the red flare dyes his beard and he gets mm-hmm. that crazy look. And just like, dude, that scene with her in the arm, like, I mean, he's this sadistic. Like, it's one of those characters you love to hate where it's like,
yeah,
he's funny and charming, but like, he is a sadistic monster.
That's where it gets a little, like, it's like, all right, you know, like the arm thing, it goes on a little too long. It's
yeah.
Like, she's sawing her arm off and no one noticed. It's like, okay. Like,
again, this movie should have been released and made like 8 years ago. It would have been a lot better.
Is that, so what do you think? You think that's the chief reason for the flopperoo?
I do.
Hmm.
I do. I think that, and I think it's not an... I mean...
Well, I don't think people want to go to the theater either.
I think that's part of it.
Why the fuck would you when...
They come out in like 2 weeks.
Everyone's almost got a home theater at home anymore. It's not expensive. You know, these giant screens are very affordable.
Here's an example. Like, I mean, I'm guilty of it. A movie, a franchise I really enjoy is Planet of the Apes. The new one came out, and I said, I don't really have time, but I'll be out on streaming in a few months. It's like... Unless
how many
like,
people are making that calculation?
Unless it's one of these big event movies, people are just kind of doing that. They're like, yeah, I want to see it, but it'll be out on streaming in a few months and I'll watch it then.
And it's like, is anyone like, you always bitch about something when you go into the theater. Mm-hmm. At least I do.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's the ticket prices or the concessions, if you're stupid enough to buy concessions.
Would you hear Sony bought Alamo Drafthouse?
It's amazing.
Yeah, I know.
I remember when
there was one.
I remember when there was one Alamo. It was a long time. I've never been either.
I'm saying there was like legislation up until I think 2020 that prevented. I mean, for a century that prevented the studios
yes,
from doing just that.
I know. That's when I was reading the article. I'm like, what am I reading here? It's very odd.
You and I frequent a lot of when we go see movies. It's usually for like independent cinema, like that have like,
if we can, sure,
that rely on membership support and that type of stuff.
Yeah,
I saw Furiosa at one of the Philadelphia Film Society theaters. Man, they do such great work. It's just, dude, there's four trailers max. It starts on time. There's no commercials. There's no go get your Coca-Cola here. It's great.
The commercials and the on time thing is killer.
If you're a member, you get $5 off all tickets. It's just, you can't. Some of these people are doing work that make you want to go to the movies, and this company does it. As you and I have been to, like, the Colonial to see those silent movies. Places like that make you want to go to the movies still.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yes.
There's things you can do.
A buddy of mine goes, I think it's Marcus Theaters that does this. I'm not familiar with the change. It's Movie Tavern. Mm-hmm. And he says, you know, he does like a date night with his wife, like every Tuesday or so. They just go, whatever's playing.
Whatever's playing, yeah.
And he says they do a good job there. And not only that, he says they do, I think, Mondays for $5.
It's a mystery movie, yeah.
He says,
I'm sure you discover some great shit.
He says, what a fucking great idea. Yeah. He's like, it's $5. You don't like the movie, leave.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, it's like, that's to get people there. Like, right. You know, and of course, once you're in the door, well, sure, I'll have a hot dog. Why not? $17. Like,
some chicken fingers for $37.
Whatever. But still, it's like, you gotta.
Wish I had some Bloomin' Onion for after this.
I'm going to start sneaking Bloomin' Onion into the theater. Oh, I'm such a piggy with those. You should see me. I'm a mess.
Really?
Oh, I get slopped up in the sauce.
Bloomin' Onion is essentially just like a lot of fried onion.
Yeah.
That's like...
It's amazing. Are you kidding me?
I have to get one tonight.
I need one every day. I need them for breakfast, dude. I need them every day.
Texas Roadhouse has a version. I know that.
And I think it sucks. I think I've had it and I was like, this isn't a Bloomin' Onion.
Oh, what do you call this thing? I hope that George Miller does, and I think he will, because he does own the rights. That's the key.
Something tells me someone gives him the money.
Even if Warner's like, no, we don't want to do this next one, someone will.
And if he's smart, and if everyone's game, which probably not, you bring back old Mel. Because like you said in our Patreon thing, someone did a little mock-up of like old
AI
Max.
Art, yeah, fucking AI, I think, dude.
But I think I saw someone do it. Okay. Like, I could be wrong, but it looks awesome.
Yeah.
Old Mel.
Yeah.
Old Max, come on. As much as we both like Tom Hardy and thought he was pretty good in the role, like...
Well, like you said, the more I think about it, I'm like, well, I guess it wasn't that physically demanding. I really do think it just comes down to he doesn't want to go to the fucking desert.
I could see Mel just being like...
Where'd you say it was? Africa? Like, he doesn't want to...
Namibia, yeah.
Not Mel. Yeah, well, I guess that's...
Namibia is awesome, too, by the way. Not that I've been, but as I told you, it's where it's the one of the places where the desert meets the ocean.
Yeah, right.
And it's just a cool place
in
general.
Yeah, it
seems that way. Yeah.
Well, we're going to come back and probably do more themed movie catch-ups, I think, in the future.
It seems like a good trend.
I think it's a fun way to connect everything.
It's a good way to bring it all together.
So, next time on the show, we're doing Ishtar, and then we're going to do some other films of Elaine May.
And recommend some flops to us, maybe.
And recommend some stuff coming out that we can maybe we'll do one of these new movies we'll both go see each month, and we'll try to...
I can be bothered. Yeah. And also, Whoop Whoop. I want to hear, get this movie trending or something, or whatever you want to call it.
Get people talking about it. So, yeah. Thank
you. Give us any Whoop Whoop suggestions you might have.
Yeah, movies like that. Yeah. Weird, strange movies that deserve more attention. That's what the show's all about, really.
Indeed.
Thank you so much for listening to this show, and we will see you next time.
Thanks for listening.